KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Daily Cafe, located at 902 Northwest 13th Avenue. Daily Cafe serves breakfast, lunch, wine, and spirits daily. Lunch was provided by Bokeh Bowl, with two locations, 1028 Southeast Water Avenue and 1200 Northwest 18th at Northrop. Bokeh Bowl serve ramen with homemade noodles and more. Dinner was provided by Canaan's Barbecue Rib Express, located at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, an award-winning genuine hickory smoked barbecue with their own special sauce. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 8 o'clock, and coming up next on Positively Revolting, Ani speaks with Ken Ward and Lindsay Goodwin of The Reluctant Radical.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland here on your very your own community radio stations.
KBOO. There I am. Okay. You are listening to KBOO Portland on your this is Positively Revolting on your very own community radio station. I'm Ani, and this morning I am super excited to be talking with a couple of folks about direct action, about stopping climate change, right? So climate change is obvious and it's happening now. Anyone with the power to observe global trends in weather patterns can see that there are devastating new developments already that have resulted in thousands of deaths in developing countries, with increased storms, monsoons, flooding, extreme heat events. And we're watching it actually affecting weather patterns here at home, really globally. The superstorms that people have talked about, the worst hurricane in recorded history, followed by the worst hurricane in recorded history, followed by the worst hurricane in recorded history. And to see three major storm events happen within a month and a half of each other last year, each record setting in its own way, it really does give somebody reason to stop and think, something's going on here. We have, last year was the hottest year on record. The previous hottest year on record was, in fact, the year before. Again, we can see trends. It's obvious. And with a problem so huge, it's really easy to feel overwhelmed. It's easy to feel powerless. And those feelings all too often lead people to the paralysis of hopelessness. But this morning, we're talking to folks who did not become paralyzed. We're talking with Ken Ward and with Lindsay Grazel, Am I pronouncing your...
Grayzel.
Grayzel. Yeah, I tried. thank you, Lindsay.
No problem.
And Ken's story about the actions that he's taken to impact climate change, and as it's told in the movie that is recently released, The Reluctant Radical. Lindsay is the director and producer of that film. And that film is screening tomorrow at the Hollywood Theater. It's a sold-out screening as part of the Echo Film Festival. But there is an encore screening on Wednesday. So if you don't already have tickets, Wednesday, May 2nd, a couple of Wednesdays from now, if you don't already have tickets, you can, in fact, check out the film on Wednesday, May 2nd. I want to thank you both, Ken and Lindsay, for joining us this morning in the studio. You know, we're talking about climate change. It's a state of emergency. It is real. It's happening no matter what some politicians may like to believe, or at least to spit out of their mouths. It's undeniable. And yet many of us, most of us, live our daily lives as though there's nothing really going on. As if, well, it's just too big. We can't do anything about it, so we just move through. Ken, you weren't able to do that. And so you have talked about being sort of a lifelong environmentalist. You have been the deputy director of Greenpeace. You have worked with Osberg. I read an article where you talked about being at Earth Day in 1970 and feeling the sense of people can do things to impact. But you've really taken that to heart, and you have done things, let's just say, that could have hopefully impact climate change, but also have major impacts for your personal life in acts of civil disobedience. Can you talk about your path towards environmentalism? When did you realize that the environment was something of critical importance that you needed to put your life behind?
Well, first of all, good morning, and thanks for having us here. Is this on?
Let's.
There we go.
Yeah.
So, again. Thanks for having us on. I love getting up really early in the morning to come down to KBOO, my favorite community radio station, to which everyone should contribute. so let's see. I cared about environmental issues as far back as I can remember.
Yeah.
I'm not one of those people that's like spends a whole lot of time in out of doors or the wilderness, although I do appreciate that. It just seemed self-evident to me from a pretty early age that, you know, some care and attention to the ecosystems that support us was probably a good idea. I opted early on to try to figure out a way to make that my life's work in a professional way as well as just something I cared about personally. So that's how I ended up working for the public interest research groups, first in my own area of Massachusetts and Rhode Island, and I was the executive director of New Jersey PIRG for about 13 years. I started working on climate change really early on in the going, so to speak. It was a project we worked on in New Jersey in the late 90s. I think at the time... That climate change is kind of what I complain about in seeing how environmentalists are still somewhat dealing with it, which is that it was just one amongst a variety of pretty long-term problems. And in fact, compared to some of the things we worked on, it didn't seem as urgent. I mean, dealing with toxics in inner cities in New Jersey in 1998 seemed like a much more immediate problem. People are dying. Kids are, you know. Whereas climate change was kind of like seemingly this global, slow-moving thing that once we'd solve toxics and a few other things, we could kind of, you know, we'd somehow get to it. So, and I think that's how a lot of people, even professional environmentalists, still conceive of the problem. But that's not the reality. I mean, the reality is that none of the other issues that we care about or are working on with the with the exception really of the threat of nuclear war, are capable of removing the conditions that make civilization possible. And that's what's happening right now. And if you get to the point of understanding that, then you really are, as an individual and as an organization, as society, you're confronted with the question of, well, do you act on that or not? And I completely understand why people and institutions find it extraordinarily difficult to turn away, I mean, to in some way continue to deal with the things that are immediately at hand, where things are high at stake. It's high stakes, and still somehow be able to encompass this existential problem. It's an immense challenge.
Absolutely. I mean, in so many ways, we are living in a state of emergency. There is the climate, definitely. There's also human rights emergencies. There are, the emergencies created with war and with refugees and, you know, people, again, in so many ways, the world is on fire. Mm-hmm. But as you say, climate change and what we're facing with that has the distinct possibility of ending life as we know it. And to me, it's just unfathomable that there are still folks who are professing that it's not real or not as bad when we see the evidence so clearly developing around us and we hear reports, peer-reviewed studies saying, actually, it's worse than we had previously thought. It seems like every report I see, it's, well, actually, the computer modeling that we had been thinking about, it seems optimistic now. And, you know, the cycles that create climate change are also, they feed each other. Mm-hmm. And so as one system becomes hotter or has more energy, its effects are actually greater than had previously been thought.
Absolutely. So, and I think we're increasingly in to the extent that there are a variety of narratives and stories out there about climate change, one of them that we continue to accept is that science has some kind of a handle on our situation.
Right.
We're increasingly in conditions where things are moving so fast that we really don't. I mean, there's just so many that, you know, we're right at the edge of so many tipping points. We've just seen evidence in the last couple of months of one of them, which is that the North Atlantic thermal system is slowing down at a ferocious rate, 15% over the last 60 years that's been being measured. And that kind of impact of climate change wasn't expected for 100 years. So we're just seeing stuff happening really quickly.
Yes.
And as you said, we don't know what the synergistic impacts of these things are. So,
and so you, at some point, you decided you could not just go along with business as usual. And you decided, with some inspiration from Thoreau, perhaps, to start looking at how you could personally through all of your intentionality behind an action that could have some impact, that could do something to stop the harm that's being done.
I also wasn't able to find a job. I mean,
the pragmatic matters aside.
I ended up doing the things that are the story that's related in Lindsay's movie of me. My engagement in direct action was the end result of acts of desperation on my part, because I tried to do all the other things that one might do. I was, I tried to remain employed as a professional staff person in major environmental groups, trying to shift the strategy that we were following, and that didn't work. And then I tried to organize from outside of institutions, but within a think tank kind of a way, as a thought leader and a writer, and that didn't work. And then I tried to do other things, including working for sustainability movement, and that didn't work. And I finally did end up in a point where I realized that I had been arguing for some time in writing that we really needed to see a different kind of protest and direct action, and kind of hoping other people would do that. And then got to the point where it just seemed like it wasn't going to happen, and that it just wasn't ethically appropriate for me to think that other people should do something that I wasn't prepared to do myself. So that's how I came to it. It was really the end step in a series of trying to figure out some other thing to do that wouldn't involve jail.
Right. And Lindsay, as a filmmaker, when did you get associated with Ken? When did you discover what Ken was doing and decide that this was a story that needed telling?
Pretty much the first conversation we had, or certainly by the second, I was like, okay, how would I make a film about you? I had always, you know, had my own concerns about climate change, but was not actively thinking about it very hard, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And the way Ken talked about it, first of all, it sort of opened my eyes to how dire the situation really was. But also, if all this information was so clear and available to our politicians and the people who are running these groups, like, why aren't we doing something more about it? And just the way he talked about it so openly, mm-hmm. Made a huge impression on me. And then also that he had paid a big personal cost for stepping into the role of direct action.
Now, can we clarify, just because we've been trading this story back and forth, I just want to clarify for my friends and people that might invite me to social situations that I don't go around haranguing people about climate change
all the time.
That we kind of, you know...
Like, this is what it is to be a filmmaker, though.
Introduce me and like, oh, let me tell you all the terrible things about climate change.
No, the it's reason like, we ended up having this conversation is because I ask a lot of questions.
Right.
I'm sort of empowered in my role to dig deeper. And as soon as you do that, all these stories start coming out. And especially with people who are, you know, open and willing to share their stories. And Ken was one of those people, so...
Fantastic. And speaking about digging deeper, this is a moment to actually ask you to, you dear listeners, to think about what kind of information KBOO brings you every weekday. Every weekday, we dig deep to bring you relevant information and news you can use, don't we, Teresa? Oh, Teresa.
Yes.
Yes, we do. There you are.
In fact.
And right now is a great time to call with your support at 877-500-5266.
It is a great time to call in, and you'll be joining Keenan from Beaverton, who renewed, and Kathy from Aurora, who's a returning member, and they called 877-500-5266, and you can do it too. You can also, if you're listening to us online, click on kboo.fm, and it'll show you what to do, and you can join us up. I would like to suggest that you decide to become a member for $10 a month. $10 a month, that's $120 a year when you stack it all up between now and next year, and for that, you can get a t-shirt. We have a wonderful KBOO t-shirt that was designed by a local artist. It's a black t-shirt, and it shows someone, I don't know how to describe this t-shirt, actually.
You're describing the higher being t-shirt,
aren't you? The higher being t-shirt, that's exactly what it is. Okay, so be a higher being and get a t-shirt, and then you'll see what I'm talking about.
It's pretty phenomenal. It's an alien with many eyes, say, across the galaxy, with an ear horn so that they can receive KBOO's signal. Because, yes, we reach many intelligent beings and life forms everywhere. And, I think that you don't have to go to those links. You don't have to have some intergalactic ear horn to pick up KBOO's signal. Count your lucky stars and call 877-500-5266.
I would like an intergalactic ear horn, though. That'd be pretty cool.
You would. And we'll look for one of those, Teresa.
Well, you can do something. I mean, have you ever wondered, when you're hearing about climate change and you're understanding just how severe it is, have you ever just wanted to do something? Well, you can do something by joining KBOO, and it's wonderful to talk to these people who actually shut the valve on a giant oil pipe, who actually made a movie about it. That's fantastic, and it's encouraging, and it's the sort of programming that you can get on KBOO Portland. Call us right now, 877-500-5266. Will you consider just making the plunge? $10 a month will get you that t-shirt. Become a member now and be entered to win a prize. Today's drawing is for a $300 gift certificate from Brothers, a medical and recreational dispensary. Call 877-500-5266 now to be entered for a chance to win. Go to kboo.fm for rules and details on all the prizes. And pretty good odds, too, for that. Right, Ani?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, everyone is a winner with KBOO, right? Because again, this is grassroots media. This is people-powered media. We have volunteers from the community coming in to learn how to use the tools to make radio, to make podcasts, to tell stories, to amplify messages, to get the word out. You know, KBOO's inherent values are peace, justice, democracy, environmentalism, multiculturalism, freedom of expression, and social change. And those are the values that we try to embody throughout our public affairs, throughout our news, throughout our music and theater and poetry shows too, even how we do things off the air, informing our community standards and house rules, informing how we buy office supplies. I mean, you know, these are the values that we try to breathe life into on a daily basis so that, you know, we can do our part to make the world a better place. And that's what you're doing with your ears as you listen to KBOO. But you can also do it right now by financially supporting KBOO and join us, participate as a member. Please do give us a call, 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. And let us know that you're there, that you're listening, and that you care about these issues, you care about your community, you care about KBOO. 877-500-5266. And let's, at this moment, go ahead and return our attention to the conversation at hand. Thank you, Teresa. We will check back in with you in a few. And we're right now looking at, let's sort of fast forward. Actually, let's maybe go backwards again. So you're not a drag at parties. You do converse about many things.
Thank you.
Cool. I like to know this. I've often been accused of being a drag at parties, as I'm, you know, what about more about police brutality? You know, it's just one of those things. Because again, we are living in a state of emergency. And there's a lot to discuss. And yet you are somebody local, you know, from this area now, but I am fascinated with the story I've heard about you deciding with a friend to block. Was it a coal transport boat?
This is coal,
some years ago now.
Yes, 5 years ago or now.
Yeah. And can you talk about what led up to that action?
Well, that was the result of my concluding that I needed to take direct action myself, because I, as I said, I had been in urging others to do it.
And
I was thinking, oh, younger people could
them.
Somehow go do it, and they didn't. And I thought that we needed a different kind of direct action and than we had seen on climate. And up until that date, actions were primarily protests. I mean, they were primarily blocking government offices, sometimes gates, but this is kind of before the big pipeline responses had occurred. And I also thought we needed to see, direct action that was higher stakes in the sense of actually trying to shut down something. And also that it was important that we engage in direct action that was based purely on climate. And then prior to that, a lot of protest had been, I don't know if this is inappropriate, but it was kind of multi-textured. It was it involved what the local impacts were, the economic impacts, and a whole set of things. And I felt like climate was getting lost in that, and that it was important to try to do an action that was just on climate, and was also important to try to shut down a functioning, economically functioning fossil fuel facility of some sort, purely on the basis of climate. If we could accomplish that, then that would create, I mean, I talk about it as creating a moral point of conflict that would cause a public conversation and debate around, what are these crazy people doing? They're trying to shut down. I mean, my original plan was to do it in February, preferably in a snowstorm, so that people would be saying, what, are you trying to put people, you know, out in the cold? And we could say, no, not at all, but we can't continue to do this either. We have to find some other alternative that neither puts people out in the cold and nor continues on this path to the destruction of the planet. So anyway, that was the impulse. And then it just seemed kind of logical that I should just look around and find the biggest source of carbon emissions where I lived, which was New England. And that was the Brayton Point power plant, which actually at the time was the biggest source of emissions from Canada to Maryland. And then I spent a couple of months just hanging around the plant, just because I don't know anything about coal plants, and sort of reading up on it. And I borrowed the Audubon Society bird book from my dad and got some binoculars and sat on the beach and looked at birds, and then looked at the coal plant, and then looked at some more birds. And there were some great birds there. And over the course of 2 months, off and on, kind of figured out a way that we could try to affect the plant. So
right. And was how did you decide to affect the plant?
We bought a lobster boat, a 33-foot lobster boat. We being my partner Jay O'Hara, who actually knows something about piloting small boats, I don't. It's possible online to watch to track large ships. So we were able to sit there and watch this coal ship, which goes from Hampton Roads in Virginia, taking Appalachian mountaintop removed coal, loading it there, and going up to the Brayton Point power plant. And we could just watch that ship going back and forth. And then on the day we decided to do this, we were able to take this little lobster boat and go in front of where the ship would ordinarily dock and toss out a giant anchor that was bolted underneath the boat so we couldn't get, nobody could get to it, and then call up the police and eventually talk to the captain on the ship itself, saying that we would really appreciate it if they didn't burn any more coal in New England at this power plant.
What was the result of that?
The first result was the police showed up on the dock, and police officer got out, opened his trunk, took out a sniper rifle, loaded it, cocked it, which we could hear. It was a very clear morning. Mm. I've never had that experience before of hearing that sound,
right,
of somebody looking at you. And then soon thereafter, the ship came in, and it was unable to dock, and it kind of had to moor off to the side. And then after that, I think we had 4 Coast Guard boats come, and we were boarded by extremely polite Coast Guard boarding officers. And then we spent, and then we had created a point of extreme law enforcement confusion, we should say. We found out afterwards that there was a conference call that went on for about 3 hours that had 7 different law enforcement agencies phoned into it trying to figure out what the heck to do with this. And the Coast Guard, which was the lead agency, had, it turns out, a lively internal debate. We thought there might be a debate between the people that were wanting to like immediately snatch us and send us to Guantanamo or something like that, and maybe more moderates, but it didn't turn out that that was the case. In fact, the actual debate, as we understand it, was between aspects of the Coast Guard who were arguing that they should just let us alone because we were anchored and we'd done nothing other than anchor, and we were in fact engaging in a protected First Amendment speech. Is astounding to me.
Right.
They didn't win. But the more moderate folks did. And they, after a while, they came and did. We were prepared to be arrested, taken to jail, and we were all set for this. We had like another captain to take the boat away if that was necessary. And they didn't do that. I think they're brilliant. They came and said, okay, if you stay here, we're just going to fine you $40,000 a day. Which is not something we had thought about.
Right.
I was sitting there going, that's my kid's entire college fund right there.
Right.
And so we decided, well, okay, we'll move. I think in retrospect, if Jay and I, we've talked about this, of course, we wouldn't do that again. We would just say, well, go ahead and find us. But at the time, we were kind of chicken, and so we decided to move. And then the problem was, of course, that we couldn't move because we designed the thing so we couldn't move.
It was right.
300-pound anchor bolted underneath the ship. There was the point was
not to be moved.
Yeah. So we spent 2.5 hours trying to raise the anchor ourselves and couldn't do that. And eventually, we had to actually hire somebody to come lift the anchor. And then they let us go. That was astounding. We just like sailed away looking at each other going, can you believe this? We just blocked the whole thing for a day and they let us go.
And doesn't that actually really speak volumes to the seriousness of the situation when we have those debates within agencies of pretty much what amounts to the necessity defense?
I think so. I mean, my experience, which I definitely think it's that I might have a Pollyanna-ish view of the possibilities within law enforcement and the justice system, because first of all, it's completely skewed by the fact of who I am and who we are, that we're not in danger of being shot, you know, and a bunch of other things. But nonetheless, I've had these series of unique, interesting experiences that tend to underline the possibility, the distinct thing about climate change is that there are people salted everywhere across all demographics, across all politics, that in some way get what's going on and think something fundamentally different should be done, even given the current climate, the politics. Mm-hmm. So there was clearly there was something in the Coast Guard that was an interesting debate. When in that case, when we then were brought to trial and we were set to go in on trial day, we in fact were granted a necessity defense, which means we had Bill McKibben and Jim Hansen and authors, scientists ready to testify on our behalf. The district attorney of the county showed up unexpectedly and said, asked to meet with us privately and said, I agree with you guys. I just finished reading this article in Rolling Stone written by Bill McKibben, and I agree that climate change is the biggest problem facing our society, and I'm going to drop, if it's okay with you, we're going to drop all criminal charges. We said, well, gee, would you say that in public? And he was like, oh, do you want me to? And we're like, yeah, that would be good. And he, in fact, came out and stood on the courthouse step, said he agreed with us, held up the Rolling Stone article, dropped criminal charges. And then he went further than that. He said, and I'm going to go down with these guys to New York City and march in the big climate march. And he did. He showed up. He brought his family. He required all of his staff to come down. We marched down Central Park West.
And that was the climate march last year?
Four years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a pretty extraordinary response at the district attorney level.
It
was Massachusetts. But nonetheless, it is, I think we keep seeing these examples in individual jurors. And in this case, it was a part of the Coast Guard, district attorneys, where somebody who is clued in onto what is really happening is responsive. And I think that's one of the, it's kind of the unexpected ways that climate can play out. In the valve turner case right now, for example, where we've had four different states that we did this in, so we have four different prosecutions, and in three of them, we were all denied a necessity defense. In my own case, however, I had one and a half hung juries,
right,
which means that the jurors agreed with me, even though we weren't allowed to. And we are waiting on Monday. We will find out whether the judge in the Minnesota case of Annette Klapstein and Emily Johnson and others, which is slated to go to trial in the summer, they were by their judge has allowed them to put on a necessity defense. That was appealed, so we're waiting to hear about that on Monday. But if that happens, it will be the first full climate necessity defense case tried in the U.S., so that'll be pretty fascinating.
Lindsay, when did you become aware of Ken's story? You realized as soon as you talked to him, the second time you talked to him, you had to be involved in making a film about this. At what point did you become acquainted with Ken?
That was the early summer of 2015. And when I floated the idea of doing a short film, I thought it was going to be a 10 or 15 minute film at that point, and he agreed. And at the time, I had three different projects that were all in post-production at the same time, and so I was like, I'm kind of busy now, let's pick this up in October. And then literally like 3 days later, Shell Oil announced that the Fenneca was coming to Portland to be repaired, and Ken started to plan an action on how to keep the Fenneca from leaving Portland. And so I just put all those other projects on hold and filmed him for about a week and a half or so leading up to that dramatic action when the Fenneca left Portland.
And talk about that action, Ken.
Well, Shell was going up to drill its first test drills in an area that was only accessible because climate change melted enough ice that they could reasonably go up there.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent up a sort of flotilla of ships, one of which was this icebreaker, Finnish icebreaker called the Fennica, which was crucial because it had the equipment that would be used in the event of a blowout. So it was damaged, and it was sent, of all places, to Portland. And instantly, the climate, you know, action community of Portland began conversations and discussions and planning on, well, what could we do to prevent, you know, to prevent the ship from entering or leaving? Because if that was possible, even delaying it would have stopped the drilling for the summer, the test drilling. You know, there was a lot of work was invested in organizing around kayaktivism, which I think is great, but I also didn't think would stop it.
Mm-hmm.
If I'd had my druthers and if I'd had any money, I would have, when we tried to purchase or somehow acquire a larger ship that would actually would have been able to block the thing, that wasn't possible. So I just took, I bought the largest boat I could afford, which is an 18-foot dory, tried to outfit it and tried to get out. I tried to get out to block it from coming in first with my friend Emily, who came down. I met Emily Johnson because she heard that I was going to go do this thing and called me up and said, who are you doing this with? And I said, nobody. I don't know anybody here. And she was like, I'll come. And she got in the car and drove down, got in the dory, and we tried to block it coming in. That didn't work. Lindsay was out in a ship trying to film us too. Then we tried to block it coming out of the dry dock, and that didn't work. And then finally, I was able eventually to anchor in the path of the ship in the spot where the two Greenpeace climbers had been pulled up by the police after Shell got the court order, but which didn't last very long. And then it was quite a spirited. One of the more exciting parts of Lindsay's movie is some of the shots of the Coast Guard and the sheriffs running down people in kayaks on the water, and it was kind of a pretty intense melee out there.
Yeah.
And I was out there and trying to sail through that, and it's not possible to sail as fast as a Finnish icebreaker can move, so we didn't stop it. But the attempt was pretty exciting, and I hope if we find ourselves in a similar situation again, that we do a more effective job. And I, you know, much in the same way that community radio is dependent on, you know, how much people invest, a big problem, a central problem that we face is that we don't have enough people investing resources into climate direct action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we are able to buy a large ship or, you know, or have mm-hmm. some of the things that we would actually need, we could be significantly more disruptive than we are. If we are reliant, as we are now, on individuals, you know, with their own, on their own resources, without really any institutional support and without any money, then, you know, we have to do things with kayaks, which is colorful, but it didn't actually stop an icebreaker.
All right. True that. Let's go ahead for a moment and switch our conversation. Hey, Teresa.
Hey.
Hey. How are we doing, Teresa? Are people calling 877-500-5266?
People are calling 877-500-5266, and we need a few more now.
I know that we have a $1,000 goal for this show, and we make show goals, you know, sort of based on what we believe we can do with listenership and whatnot and past track records. So Positively Revolting listeners have been super generous in the past because you understand the importance of participating in, you know, in an organization that is grassroots supported, that is people powered, that gives you access to conversations to broaden the public discourse. That's why I do the show every Friday morning, because the public discourse needs to be broad, right? We need to shake up the status quo and actually make the world a better place. Listeners to Positively Revolting understand that, and that is why you have given generously in the past. Right now, you be a part of history by joining KBOO. We are 50 years old this year, and your contributions keep us going into the future and actually keep us going right now. It's you that have built this station. So 877-500-5266 is the number to call to keep building.
I just got news that Don has called in to renew. Thank you, Don.
Fabulous,
for calling 877-500-5266. You know, it's so much nicer weather, and I think that's one reason I had such trouble waking up this morning. But, you know, now that I'm here, it's quite an eye-opener because we have an actual Valve Turner and an actual filmmaker in the studio right now. I mean, for me, a Valve Turner, it's like seeing a moon astronaut. I mean, this is a celebrity in, by my lights. This is someone who has actually shut it down, actually did it and lived to tell the tale, and isn't even locked up. And not only that, was granted the necessity defense, but you've been listening, so you've been hearing all this stuff, and you know just how dramatic this actually is. Which brings us to community radio. How much of this have you heard in the mainstream media over the last couple of years? A whole lot about valve turners? No. I mean, they cover it when it actually happens, and then it goes away. And, you know, if you turn on CNN, for example, they're going on and on and on about whatever they can do to impeach Trump. And when they're not doing that, then they're just getting rhapsodic about cruise missiles, and they have their own people on the ship, and they show the, you know, the great big rockets going off and the rockets' red glare, and we're all supposed to get excited and patriotic, which is disgusting because that's where they're really coming from. KBOO actually cares about the fact that the planet is in an emergency situation, such an emergency that it is absolutely appropriate and necessary to go and shut the valves. Of course, you have to know what you're doing. Talk to the valve turner. But to actually take direct action, because we are in that emergency. The planet is just being absolutely screwed over, and it's in a mess, and we have to do something about it. There's something you can do right this second, and I think you know what it is, but let me line it out for you. It's calling 877-500-5266. That's 877 toll free from wherever you're at. 500 because it's easy to remember, and 5266 because it spells KBOO. That's 877-500-5266. It has to be you because you know you're the person who is community minded enough to actually get this sort of thing done. And that's who we depend on, that 10% of our audience that actually carries the rest of the society on their shoulder because they simply have evolved enough to understand that that you are part of society, and it is appropriate for you to spend some of your money not on armaments, as you are forced to do with your tax money, but rather on something actually useful, getting the truth out to other ears and other brains. 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. And if you become a member now, you will be entered to win a prize. Today's drawing is for a $300 gift certificate from Brothers, a medical and recreational dispensary. Call 877-500-5266 now to be entered for a chance to win. Go to kboo.fm for rules and details on all the prizes. And frankly, the fact that it is a sunny day and a bit of a slow morning here means that your chances are even better to get this $300 gift certificate. And even if you don't use the stuff, well, just think of the wonderful, the miraculous medical effects it has on people, say, with Parkinson's. So that's a very valuable gift certificate, and you can be calling right now like this person is. 877-500-5266. Make it happen, right, honey?
Yes, in fact, it is you. You, your very own self, that can make it happen. In fact, it's only you that can make it happen because it takes everyone doing what we can to support community radio, to support people's media, to support KBOO, KBOO, your community radio station. Please do participate and jump on in. 877-500-5266. I want to mention that the Echo Film Fest is happening throughout this weekend at the Hollywood Theater, and I have some pairs of tickets to see different shows throughout the weekend. And these are all, you know, we would love to thank you if you are able to contribute $60 or more. Please grab a pair of these tickets. Tonight's showing is Kiana Scotzi, and that is tonight at the Hollywood. Tomorrow, we have a pair of tickets to see the sold-out screening for The Reluctant Radical. And that is that's the movie we're talking about, well, this morning. And again, tomorrow is sold out, so the only way you can get in tomorrow is to, let's just say, call now and get this as your thank you gift. There's a couple of screenings on Sunday as well. The Five Seasons, The Gardens of Piet Adolf, whose last name I really don't know how to pronounce. I'll just admit it. But that's at 6:30 on Sunday. And earlier in the afternoon, there's Real Talk. And that is a presentation that Mike Crenshaw is going to be involved with, I do believe. So that is Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And any one pair of these tickets can be yours with your contribution of $60 or more to KBOO, your community radio station. Thank you, Teresa. We will check back in with you in a moment. And that number to call to contribute is 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm. I gotta say that I know we need more than $800 left to raise this morning in the next 15 minutes. We can do that with everyone contributing now. Please do call and light up all those phone lines. So I want to jump forward to the actions that are highlighted. Well, to what we have come to really know as the valve turning with the tar sands project, Ken. This, again, you had mentioned it was something that has taken place in four states. It was a coordinated action. And, again, kind of upping the ante a little bit to actually taking direct action to stop the flow of tar sands oil. What led you to work with others to do that?
Well, I was hoping to not have to do this again, at least while my my son is still living with me. But as you said, things have continued to go downhill, and it seemed important to try to do something else along the same lines as the lobster boat. Mm-hmm. I had subsequently to that action moved to the West Coast. So in looking at both what's the biggest problems out here, but also what's the biggest sources of carbon emissions, coal and tar sands oil are among the worst of our fossil fuel problems. It seemed like that's the appropriate target. And, did similar as we did with the lobster boat, which was to examine the problem and figure out how things work and what were the opportunities and options to halt the process. We knew that people in Canada had pioneered the technique of shutting down oil pipelines, and they had broadcast themselves doing it on YouTube, so you could see how it was done. It was important to us that we do it in the safest, most careful possible manner. And we took sort of multiple steps to ensure that. Most important of which is to conduct the action in a way that got the oil pipeline companies themselves to shut down their own pipeline, which did happen. We now know because at trial they'd have to testify to how they responded to this, and in fact that's how it works. So when I closed the pipeline, the Trans Mountain pipeline, it was the valve. It was already shut down by the company, which is the safest way to do it. So anyway, that's how we got to it,
And so with the five activists that were involved in four states, you said that in the case of three of the states, the necessity defense was not allowed. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So for three of the states, and that would be three of the activists, you had to go to court without arguing about the necessity of your act.
Exactly. And then in each trial, depending on the demeanor of the judge, we were kind of allowed, without being able to put experts on the stand, we were allowed to have sort of different levels of explaining ourselves from the stand, for those of us that went on the stand. I had the most lenient judge who was willing to let me talk about climate science, and was, in fact, in the first trial in particular, let me put in things like a map of Skagit County, where the action was taking place, showing what it would look like under sea level rise, of current projections of sea level rise, which is one of the reasons, I think, that led to having a hung jury there. We in the three states where we have already had trials and have been convicted of something, all of us are appealing. In my case, I'm appealing solely on the basis that I wasn't allowed a necessity defense. So I'm hoping to win that in the appeals court in Washington State. We're actually waiting to hear right now. Some of the listeners may remember the Delta 5 case in Washington, which was five folks who put up a tripod on the train tracks in Everett. And they were also allowed a kind of a quasi necessity defense, in that they were allowed to put experts on the stand, but then the judge instructed the jury to ignore that evidence. But their case has also been appealed on the basis that they were denied a full necessity defense, and the oral arguments were just heard this week in Washington. So that'll be interesting. I'm certainly hoping that they win, because that will. Good for them, good for all of us, but also good for my appeal too.
And there was one person that actually so far has received some serious jail time.
Michael Foster was sentenced to 3 years, two suspended, and he's serving 1 year sentence in the Missouri River Correctional Facility in North Dakota.
And I guess when I say serious jail time, a year seems fairly serious. And yet y'all were facing the possibility of 30 years, 20 years?
Not really. They say that. That's what the statutes say. But really, nobody, especially first offenders like us, the extreme ends of those ranges are based on people, who have prior records, who are doing it for their own benefit, who are doing it in ways that would, recklessly endanger other people. We didn't do any of those things. We weren't doing this. We were clearly not doing it for our own benefit. We had exemplary, records. So we weren't facing the higher end. But we didn't really know where we were in the middle. Because we had no way of knowing. We just guesstimated that a year was probably... we shouldn't do it. Nobody should do it unless they were fully prepared to spend it a year or two in. That's what we thought. And so that's what's happened, at least in one of our cases.
Right. So Lindsay, I want to talk with you a little bit more about making this film, The Reluctant Radical. Did you actually film some of the acts of civil disobedience for that film?
Yeah.
And so what was that like for you to actually be a part of this?
Well, from the very beginning, before I filmed at all, I consulted with a lawyer to make sure that I understood what my rights and also my responsibilities were. And so I was just careful to make sure that I was observing and not helping Ken in these actions. And so there were several occasions, the first being on the River of the Willamette when the Fenneca was going out, and initially my thought was I was going to be in the boat with him, and then I was like, no, I can't be in the boat with him. I have to be in a separate boat, because if he crosses that magic line that the Coast Guard says you can't cross, that there's no way for me to not cross it if I'm in the boat with him. So I had to get another boat. So it was always about just sort of maintaining that I could be on the lawful side of the line while he's being on the other side of the line and filming that. He had a couple of actions at a gas station, and I was surprised and delighted that in both of those cases, the management never asked me to leave, even though they asked Ken to leave, which was interesting. So I felt okay staying there and filming.
You're just the media, making sure that the story gets out.
Well, that is exactly the case. And so for the tar sands oil shutdown, I consulted a little bit the lawyer again, because the stakes were so high, and we were careful to make sure that we stayed on the outside of the fenced area, et cetera. But nonetheless, myself and my cameraman were arrested. We were, put in jail for a night and a couple days, and charged with the same felonies that Ken was charged with. So we had to get lawyers and defend ourselves. And
were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I knew it was a possibility, but I thought that that would be because there was some kind of confusion about my role there, and that once that confusion was sorted out, that I would be released and, sent on my merry way. In fact, even in the back of the patrol car, the thoughts going through my head was, how long is it going to take to get out of this? And am I going to be able to capture Ken coming out of jail? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was definitely a surprise that they were you know, pushing forward with the charges, even when it was abundantly clear that I was there as a filmmaker, that I did not enter the territory at all. So, yeah, that was a tough period, and it took about a month before eventually the charges were dropped for both myself and my cameraman.
Excellent. I just, you know, we are pretty much flat out of time. Your story is so compelling. I can't wait to see the film. It is, again, when people do such courageous acts to really put your life on the line to make sure the world can be a better place, it's so important to have other people there to tell the story, because otherwise, how does it inspire others? How does it live on past that one day? So thank you for your work, Lindsay, in being a filmmaker that is interested in telling compelling and beautiful and moving stories like this. I want to just wrap up by saying, Ken, if you had one, one sentence to tell somebody who's sort of sitting there going, I don't know, it's such a big problem. What can I do? What can I do?
Can I say two things?
Okay, yes.
One thing would be, after you've called KBOO and contributed, then maybe you could go to shutitdown.today, which is our website, and we could certainly use some support as well for our legal fund. The person who is thinking, I can't do anything, I actually don't have anything to say. I think we're facing an immense global existential crisis, and everybody has to figure out how to respond to that. I mean, I think there are some people who respond to that by going, I don't really want to think about that. I just want to live my life. And I don't really preferably not everybody does that, but I don't think it's an inappropriate decision to make. I think that there are people who are more inclined to be angry in response to this, and that's part of my response is to go, well, I can't say it on the air, but, you know.
Right.
Heck with this. And, I don't want to stand for this. And those are the people that I think are called to action, and I hope you take action. And I hope that people are willing to take more risks than living a fully comfortable life.
Excellent. And I want to thank you both for making the time to be here this morning.
Thanks for having us.
The Reluctant Radical screens tomorrow in a sold-out screening at the Hollywood Theater, but then an encore presentation, another chance to see it Wednesday, May 2nd, also at the Hollywood at 7:30. So that's The Reluctant Radical, the film that Lindsay Graizel has made about the work of Ken Ward. They've both been my guests in studio this morning. And right now is the time for you to jump on into the support of independent media, that is KBOO Community Radio. And Teresa, how are we doing?
It's happening. We've got...
Yes.
We don't just have Don, Keenan, and Kathy calling in. We also have Wally renewing from Corvallis. Wally says, hi, Annie. Joanna from Portland,
Wally,
a new member. And Joe has called in from Corvallis and following advice to do something. And, of course, we do have someone in the studio right now, a couple of people who have done something about it, someone who shut the valve on a giant oil pipe and someone who actually made a movie about it. This is the sort of story that media gets arrested for covering. You know, when you get right down to it, that's what KBOO Public Affairs is about. We'll bring you the stories that you can get arrested for covering.
Teresa, you yourself was arrested covering an environmental story
right.
Some years ago.
Yeah, they dragged me into the Clackamas Jail for covering the Enola Hill cut. Boy, that was a long time ago. That was 22 years ago. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. I want you to consider doing that that special thing for the community, for KBOO, doing something that you know actually will have a useful effect, and supporting our pledge drive, supporting Positively Revolting, supporting this sort of direct action by calling 877-500-5266. And it should sting a little bit. You should actually be taking action more than just the faintest gesture, I think. Go a little further and get yourself a KBOO hoodie by pledging $25 a month. Now, that's 3 minutes of your time, and you're going to have to work, I don't know, depends on your job, a fraction of an hour, a couple of hours to get that. $25, you know, but per month you can do that. We'll take it painlessly out of your checking account. I do it. You can do it. 877-500-5266. You will get a hoodie in your size, a black hoodie with a very militant design on it, front and back with the KBOO design and the KBOO tower and the KBOO star. That means we really mean it.
We've got 1 minute left, Teresa. 877-500-5266.
One more hoodie. Get us over, I think.
We are looking to raise $1,000 this morning. I know that we are well on our way, but we do need to hear from a couple more folks right now to make sure that we reach that goal and keep KBOO strong and united, because together we are stronger and we can do great things. I've been producing this talk radio show for 24 years because I really believe in the power of the people coming together to make the world and recreate it together, to be based in sustainability, to be based on caring for each other, a compassionate world. That is the world that I strive for. That's why I work at Positively Revolting every week, to bring you some inciting and insightful shows. And right now, that's why I'm asking for your support. Please help the effort. Keep us going. 877-500-5266.
Hey, I'd like to ask everyone here at Pledge Central to join me in giving the number to call in. Y'all ready to give the number? Here we go. Ready? 877. Do it with me. 877-500-5266. See, there's a whole mob of us here, and we're
fantastic.
Ready for you to call in.
All right, and we make way for the next program. Stay tuned to KBOO, your community radio station. We'll be with you all day long. And remember, if you don't have tickets to The Reluctant Radical, there is an encore screening on Wednesday, May 2nd. All right, all this and more coming your way on KBOO, your community radio station.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. It was provided by Daily Cafe, located at 902 Northwest 13th Avenue. Daily Cafe serves breakfast, lunch, wine, and spirits daily. Lunch was provided by Bokeh Bowl, with two locations, 1028 Southeast Water Avenue and 1200 Northwest 18th. At Northrop, Bokeh Bowl serve ramen with homemade noodles and more. Dinner was provided by Canaan's Barbecue Rib Express, located at 5410 Northeast 33rd Avenue, an award-winning genuine hickory smoked